Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Cindy Baldwin.
And this is the midweek version of the Fiber Talk podcast that we do twice a week because we like to talk about stitching. Yep. No stitch hour tonight. We'll be back next week with a stitch hour. I think next week, is next week May 7? No.
No.
No. Anyway, coming up in early May, I think it's May 7, a friend of Bess who does quilts is going to be with us. Yeah, she's going to do environmental quilts, so we're going to get to do a cool live thing with her and see those, so that's going to be pretty exciting. And if I were smart and had planned ahead, I would have the date and her full name written right down here, and I could tell you, no, didn't happen. But watch for that. Yeah. So Sunday from Romania, Alexandrina Dordea will be with us. She is a fascinating, right now she's doing insects, embroidery. It's embroidery insects that will blow your mind. Really, really amazing stuff. Her base technique is tambour, but she does beading, gold work, stump work, regular embroidery, all of it. Self-taught, all the stuff is self-taught. Oh, it does punch needle, though she's not a big fan, which I wouldn't argue with her on that. I tried that. Yeah. Couldn't get it. But, yeah, doing insects currently, but just one of those artists where, yeah, the insects will run their course and then she'll be on to something else. Gorgeous stuff. Yep. So that will be Sunday. Fiber Talk, patreon.com/fibertalk. Just before we recorded this, we're recording on Tuesday, just before we recorded our first collaborative Patreon show with Jessica Grimm. So Cindy and I and Jessica Grimm. And this was an instance where, you know, subscribe, like, and comment, please.
And share.
Yes, please share. But it's an instance where comments become shows. So on a Fiber Talk, a Friday Five, I think it was last week, 5-minute thing on Fridays that I did for our Patreon subscribers. It was five things that you can do to improve your stitching. And Jessica Grimm, who is a subscriber, posted that she would add to buy the best materials that you can afford to improve your stitching. Well, we took that and we did a whole... we're going to do 30, 40 minutes. Yeah. It ended up being an hour. Yeah. Okay. I can dream. Cindy knew right out of the gate. No way we were doing 40 minutes. So we did a whole thing on the importance of buying the best thread, linen, tools, what that means, what it doesn't mean. We had a great conversation. So that'll go up. It'll go up this week. On Patreon, and this is a collaborative thing. So we're going to do more of these with Jessica. So we'll go on Jessica's Patreon and the Fiber Talk Patreon page. So if you're not a Fiber Talk Patreon member, patreon.com/fibertalk. It's either $5 or $10, and then highly recommend that you go to Jessica Grimm, that you follow her to get her blog every Monday. Because her blog is tremendous. She really does an awful lot of medieval gold work, and you get to learn a lot about, and she travels to museums, pictures, and this amazing old stuff, and she talks about it and how it's done, and then she teaches classes. She's incredible. And join her Patreon too. So we're going to do these collaborative things where we're going to record a show, and then it'll go on both Patreon pages. So so this was the first of those. And we had a great conversation. That was a lot of fun talking about the quality of materials. And with Jessica, then for us in the States, you get that European perspective, which is quite different from what we are so spoiled. We are so spoiled. Yeah. Yeah. I would just kill to send a box. I mean, I would put together a box of thread of all kinds and send to Jessica, but gets over there and then what she's got to pay to get it in her hands, too expensive. It's really a shame. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I asked that Alexandrina Dordea, I asked her about getting threads in Romania. Equally tough as it is for most Europeans. And I said, I'll bet when you go on a trip that you come home with a suitcase full of stuff. Yep, you bet I do. You bet I do.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Same kind of thing. The taxes, the shipping, everything is just so expensive that, like she said, you know, I end up paying as much for the shipping as I do for the materials. So it's just a shame. But it was interesting when I asked her about that, she said, I use what I have. I make it work. And for those of us in the States, spoiled out of control, basically. But, you know, that spoke volumes to me. I use what I have and I make it work to get the look that I want. You know, and there in it, in that, that in itself is art.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, not a negative, but not necessarily a negative.
Right.
Yeah. So it was interesting. But yeah, same thing in my head. Oh, if I could send you, you know, send you threads, you know, cloth.
Yeah, but, you know, unless you could do it on a regular basis, it would be almost.
Right.
You know, it's like, here's what you don't have. That's almost cruel.
Right.
And
yeah.
Of course, they know that because, you know, if they've done any traveling outside of Europe where these things are available, they know what's available.
Right. Yeah.
And they know they can't get it without paying a whole lot more for it.
Yep. Yeah. Well, she used to live in Malaysia and she said she's still working on using the beads because beads were so prevalent and available over there. That when she moved back to Romania, she brought a supply and she's still working off of that. You know, you make it work. So, yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Cool.
And speaking of that, Kathy Ray, if you go to Facebook, look up Needle in a Haystack, Kathy Ray, C-A-T-H-E and then R-A-Y. She posted a thing the other day because, of course, in the news, and you know, we're not going to get political here, but the whole tariff thing and supplies. And Kathy did a whole thing, a long list of how many needlework things come from outside the States. Because we get it in our heads that, well, it's here, we have it, so it must come from the States. No, it doesn't. Most of it comes from overseas. Matter of fact, just about all of it, but a long, long list of because she what Zweigert fabrics, because and that's the other thing is we, all the over dye companies we have here in the States, but they got to get their supplies from somewhere. Zweigert's in Germany,
and we heard that from Susie Valerie.
Yep,
last Sunday.
That's right.
All of the base threads for Karen. For the over dyes for Karen come from overseas.
Yep. So all that comes into play. What Kathy was talking about, Averissoire, DMC, those are French. MPI Silk is China. Painter's Threads from the European Union. Well, when we interviewed her about Painter's Threads, yeah, they ship all that in. Scissors, mostly manufactured Europe, Asia. Lighting is China. Let's see. Books, yeah. Yeah, so many of them, yeah. All, and so you start to watch with these tariffs, at some point it's going to hit the needlework community. And so now you take, for instance, in the cycling world, you know, just about everything comes from Southeast Asia in one way or another. China or Southeast Asia, carbon frames, actually most bike frames are made in Taiwan, Vietnam, China, wherever. But all the components are all from Southeast Asia. You cannot buy, there are custom bike frame manufacturers in the States, but you cannot buy a bike that has everything you need to make the bike work made in the States. It's not even possible. Mm-hmm. And you can get a frame, but all the components have to come from Shimano, which is Japanese and Southeast Asia. And several months ago, I remembered back in the pandemic, one of the hardest things to get was bike chains. Well, I go through bike chains. You know, 7,000 miles a year, I'll go through two bike chains per bike every year, no problem.
Wow.
You know, they just wear out. And if you don't replace the bike chain, you start to wear out the cogs and the chain rings, and those are even more expensive to replace. So take care of the chain, replace the chain, save the cogs and the chain rings. Back in November, first thing I did after we got the election results, first thing I did was I bought four bike chains immediately. They're sitting on a shelf. I haven't had to use them because they're sitting on a shelf. But I thought, I remember in the pandemic, you couldn't get bike chains. People were looking everywhere for bike chains and using brands they shouldn't be using just because they needed a bike chain. I thought, I am not going through that again. And I bought four, and they're on a shelf. And
right.
So I start to think in needlework, you know, do you start to look at what projects you want to do in the near future? If you haven't kitted them up, should, you know?
Right. And I think one of the things that Kathy says is that, you know, things that are in transit now and land on U.S. shores by a certain date are not going to be affected by the tariffs.
Right.
So there will be a while for the things to work their way through the sales system. It'll take a while maybe for all of the increased prices to hit.
Yeah.
So it won't be maybe such a huge shock for us.
No.
Especially in a shop that already has a lot. I mean, most needlework shops have a fair amount of stock anyway right now. And so it'll just be the newer stock that comes in. So,
right.
You know, if you need something, probably go get it now.
Yeah. 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 Because it's a higher price. Or do they just not take the shipments?
Or do they eat the cost?
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of margin in needlework shops.
Nope.
You know, so maybe they can take some of the cost. And the same thing is going to be true of people who are dyeing threads, who are dyeing fabrics. You know, they're going to pay the initial cost. But then, you know, are they going to be able to eat that cost, or are they going to pass it on? Eventually they're going to have to pass it on.
Yeah. Unavoidable.
They may be able to eat it for a while, but so I follow a guy in Chicago who is a fine art restorer called Baumgartner Fine Art Restoration, I think. And he posted a video about how the tariffs are going to affect him. And then he posted another video and he said all kinds of people were chiming in and saying, well, you should just make your own materials. You know, you should just get everything in the U.S., you know, and if there isn't anybody that's doing it, you should figure out how to do it on your own. So he starts out with the linen because so many canvases are on linen.
Yep.
And he has to be able to patch or add linings to the back or whatever. And he actually, last year he did a series of videos where he went to the linen manufacturers and to the paint manufacturers and every, you know, all of the different suppliers that he used. He went to their facilities and walked through to see how things were made. Well, you know, number one, I don't know if anybody grows flax in the U.S.
Yeah, there's item one right there, yeah.
And you can't just have a little patch of flax out in your backyard and expect to get much linen out of it. And then, and on the video about the linen, he went right to the fields. That's where he started.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so he followed the process all the way through, you know, from growing the linen to processing it so that the fibers can be removed from it.
Uh-huh.
And that's a long process. You know, that doesn't happen overnight.
Right.
And then to the factory where they weave the linen. And this isn't the kind of linen that we use. It's a really heavy, tightly woven, pretty free of slubs from what I can tell. Just looking at the kinds of things that he works on. How are you going to do that here?
No.
I mean, yeah, that would, and you know, so that's, again, we're not supposed to be doing politics, but the whole idea is, well, you bring the manufacturing back to the U.S.
Right.
Well, that would have been great if we already had brought the manufacturing back to the U.S.
Right.
And we had everything established, but we don't.
No.
You know, there aren't people that are making your bike chains here.
No, and aren't going to.
It's too expensive to start.
Right.
You know, again, you don't just open these kinds of things in your garage.
Right.
It's complicated.
Right.
And you know it from your time doing the manufacturing magazines.
Yep.
I worked in manufacturing for decades.
Yep.
You know, to get new machinery, to get the people that know how to run the machines.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
No, that's the key thing there. The machinery today, but it's the people who have the skills to run the machines. Mm-hmm. And today's machinery, you know, people think manufacturing and, you know, old greasy stuff. No, today's manufacturing is very sophisticated, all electronic, highly, you know, the guys sitting in rooms controlling machinery that is running by itself. Replacing parts, you got to know what you're doing, calibration and everything. And it's not simple. And then that investment, you know, if somebody was going to make linen here, you know, what the whole supply chain just so you could produce the cloth. And I mean, there's a video or two that I'm sure many of us have watched where a guy planting flax in his backyard and then, you know, showing how to get the fibers out of it. Holy smokes. It just doesn't happen. So.
Yeah. And a whole backyard might yield a little ball.
Yeah. You wouldn't even get a yard out of it. Yeah. No.
Yeah. And then you have to weave it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a whole, you know, that's a whole setup right there to be able to weave it in big enough pieces if you have the flax. Yeah.
So we were talking about this with respect to clothing. I forget who I was talking to, but, you know, we were talking about how in the past when you had to make all of your own clothing.
Mm-hmm.
You often started with wool or cotton that you grew. I don't know if we ever had a big linen industry in this country, but cotton and wool, certainly.
Yeah.
And those, you know, women started with the wool and they spun it after they got it into the condition that it could be spun.
Yeah.
You can't just cut the wool off the sheep and spin it. You have to clean it. And all that other kind of stuff, get all the dirt out of it, and then spin enough so that you can get enough thread to warp onto a loom and weave the cloth. And so that was precious material.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this before with some of the books that we've read.
Yeah.
There's been a couple out that have come out in the last few years about how important thread was in all in, you know, all of prehistory and history, and you know, it's only been in the last few decades that it's been so, I guess, easy to produce inexpensive materials overseas.
Throw away.
I was reading something about fashion, and there used to be two, basically two fashion seasons, like a spring and a fall, when they had the big, you know, runway shows in the in Paris and in New York and all of that. And now some of these companies are coming out with brand new stuff every week. Every week. You know, so people see it and, oh, it's new, I gotta have it, you know, and they buy it and they wear it a couple of times, and then, you know, it's because it's not well made, it's not quality, it rips or, you know, just falls apart. And besides that, there's something new.
Well, you
So
take
we don't have the reverence isn't the right kind of word, but the understanding of how important cloth is.
Well, you take Isabella Pitcher, a prior attire, who makes vintage clothing, and I mean, we both follow her. It's amazing to watch her work and what she can create. But one of the things that I've learned from her is the actual dress, the outer part, was made and kept, and all the undergarments kept you from sweating on and staining or whatever, and wearing out that outer garment, because you wanted that, and so you would use the cheap fabric for the undergarments, and because that was kept forever, passed down. We
Altered.
this shirt will not be passed down to anyone, you know, not a chance. But
No.
it's yeah, it's a different different thing, and
And because it's convenient for us, we don't know what goes into. I mean, there's still somebody that has to make the thread, you know, whether it's a natural thread, a cotton or a wool or a linen or a synthetic thread. The thread still has to be made. It still has to be woven. It still has to be cut. It has to be sewn. You know, so that all the steps are still there. The difference is that the production has moved to places where labor is less expensive, and you know, that's just the way it is, you know.
But so I mean, you have to be aware, and I think that was Kathy's whole point in posting this that prices are going to go up in general for needlework supplies. Be aware of that. If you have this a project that you are planning to stitch, now would be the time to buy ground cloth and threads. And the smart person buys extra threads, look at your chart, see what colors are used the most, and get extra skeins now. Same lot number, but so that you don't try, because you may not be
Dye
able to get
lots.
them, or it may cost a lot more. So, and shipping, she mentions about shipping, you know, that's going to go up. All of the things. So, you know, no matter what your political orientation, the reality of the economics and commerce is that prices are going to go up, and the supply chains are going to once again get altered, not unlike the pandemic. And you know, stuff hard. I mean, we all remember in the pandemic where you're waiting and shops are waiting for supplies that they can't get. And it's a reality. So if you, but then I, you know, order it if you need to, but then take stock of your stash. You know what I mean?
organize your staff. See what you have.
Do you
See
really
if
need, you know? How long would it take you to finish everything that you already have? You might think about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll need to live to 300, I think.
Right. Me too. Yeah. Yep. So, yeah. So that's, that's the other side of that coin. Think about that. Do you really need that next one when you already have eight of the previous I need to haves? Yeah, you might take stock in that and get those things out and start stitching on them. Yeah. So, good warning though from Kathy. Kathy Ray, and read that. Just go to Facebook. It's probably on her site. I don't know. I didn't look. I just saw it on Facebook, copied it, and but it's a good rundown of where all this stuff comes from, and it doesn't come from the U.S. Plain and simple. None of it. I wanted to make a point. I made a point in the Friday Five thing on our Patreon page this past Friday, but shops getting their website spoofed. Yeah. The example I used in the Friday Five thing on the Patreon page, patreon.com/fibertalk, if you want to subscribe, was Lindy Stitches. Somebody posted that she had purchased some material from Lindy Stitches and didn't hear back and discovered that the website had been spoofed. And by spoof, that means it was copied. And she had gone to the spoofed website, placed an order, credit card, I'm sure it was credit card. And that actually, that website is gone now. And then I learned since then that same thing has happened to Fireside Stitchery and Rittenhouse. And I doubt that's the complete list.
Probably not.
Yeah. But when I say spoofed, for those who don't know, and I checked this out at Lindy Stitches, okay? I took one for the team. I went to, 'cause she clicked on a link. I know she had to have clicked on a link that said Lindy Stitches or something like that, and it took her to this spoofed website. Well, I use Norton Antivirus on all my machines. And when I put that address in, the first thing came up was a warning from Norton that this is a phishing site. So basically looking for your information, all right? You can choose to go to the site or not. Okay? I went to the site. Immediately pops up another warning from Norton that this is basically a dangerous website. It's here. It's not what it appears to be. It is here to steal your money or steal your identity or whatever you give them. Okay? You can choose to go on, but we're Norton Antivirus telling me if you do, you're an idiot. Okay? So I played the idiot and I went on to that site. You wouldn't even have known it. That it was a complete, it looked like Lindy Stitch's site. Now, when I went to the actual current one, it was different. It was what they had lifted in at some point in the past. It was all there. So that lady who got faked out and spent her money, when she went directly there from that link, would not have known. Would not have known. And it was an example of if there's a link like that in Facebook or Instagram, and watch those links in those social media sites, they are not to be trusted. If she wanted to buy from Lindy Stitches, her smart move was not to use that link, but to go to her browser, type in lindystitches.com. And I'm just using Lindy Stitches as an example. Do not hold this against Stephanie Webb and her business. Not at all. It just happened
Not
to
her
her.
fault.
It's not her fault. She would not have any way known that it would happen until after this. So please don't.
Until somebody reported it to her.
Right. And don't hold that against Rittenhouse or Fireside Stitchery. These people are completely innocent. They're as innocent as we are. But if she had gone to lindystitches.com, it would not have happened. But she used that link. And so, boy, you gotta watch. You just gotta be careful, and do not trust links in social media. Do not trust links in email unless you know where they're coming from. because you can't trust it. In your email, if you go to the top, the address from the sender, click on that address. I don't know what it is in Windows, but on Apple, Mac, you just click on it, and it will show you the address, the actual address that that came from. If it's not lindystitches.com or rittenhouse.com or whatever it is, it's somebody who doesn't belong. And that address that that lady used, that was somebody from Romania. Because I checked it. It was from Romania. It's down. The site is down now. But you got to check. You got to be careful. And the more we order online, the more you just have to double check. If you get a link from somebody that you do business with normally, don't use that link. Go to the website and log in and do your business. Check it out to see, because you can't trust it. You just can't trust it. And, I felt bad for that lady because she didn't get her order. But then there's nothing Stephanie Webb can do from Lindy Stitches. Yep. You know, it's not, and she's certainly not obligated to fulfill that order unless the lady pays her. So paying twice, but then your credit card is out there somewhere.
Right.
And that to me is far worse than I didn't get 10 skeins of thread. Because now you got to call the car company, you got to cancel the thing, and blah, 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 and it never ends. And,
right.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Make
sure you have good software protection, antivirus software.
Yep. And I would venture a lot of people don't have any, don't keep it up to date. It's worth it. It's more worth it now to have good antivirus protection than it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago. It is more worth it now because the sophistication of these people, these crooks,
right,
is so much higher.
Right.
Yep.
Yep.
And but I felt really bad for that lady, but yeah, you got to protect yourself at all turns. Login, the two-factor login where you log in and then they send you a code and you go, oh, geez, I got to wait for that. Yeah. All right. While you're waiting, think what would happen if someone had stolen your identity because you didn't have that second factor and they got logged in and got into your machine. While you're waiting, think about all the damage it would do to you, and then you'll be patient. So,
right.
Yeah. Yep. Ugh. Okay, that's enough of the negative stuff, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's enough. We did the show, two, three Sundays ago, Stitch Path. We talked about Stitch Path and scroll frames. The next show we're going to do is on starting and ending threads. So that's the next one in that series that we're going to do. So if you have questions about starting and ending threads, frustrations you have, whatever, send them to me, Gary@WeTalkFiber.com, so that we can make sure we incorporate things that people want to know in that show. But that's coming up, so send those. And then if there are other topics that you would like us to cover in that series, we'd like to hear those too. So send those. Yep. Okay. Sitting in church, Easter. We go to church other Sundays too, but you're there Easter. I've had this thought several times about creating a piece that would go on the altar. Mm-hmm. One of those big pieces that goes on the altar with a big cross or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was not thinking of this during the sermon. I actually listened to the sermon, but what would that entail? Because that would be a big project. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, all right, then the pressure to make that be perfect. assuming, you know.
No, Mary Corbett did one last year or the year before.
Yeah, that's right. She did, didn't she? Yeah.
And I think she's getting ready to start work on another one. Does it have to be perfect? No, because how far away are you going to be from it?
Yeah.
Where's the front? Where's the front pew? 10, 15, 20 feet from the altar? And the back pew, all you're going to be able to see is a gold blob or maybe a gold. You'll see the cross, but it'll be, you know, you won't be able to see the detail.
Yep.
And how many people would be able to tell you, oh, you made a mistake?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't need to be perfect.
So there's some flexibility there, but durability.
Durability. Mm-hmm.
That you need to build into the system. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that what Mary did was to make hers removable. So the embroidery was mounted on some other kind of ground cloth.
Okay.
So that it could be, it was stitched onto the altar piece. But probably fairly, I don't want to say loosely,
mm-hmm.
because it needs, you know, that's heavy embroidery.
Yeah.
So you don't want it to, you know, come off of its own accord. But stitches that could be easily removed.
Yeah.
So the altar cloth could be cleaned or replaced easily.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that would be key. Because you don't want your stitching being cleaned by people who don't know what they're doing. Yeah. Mm-mm. Ruined.
Well, it depends on, you know, if you've done gold work, obviously that can't be, that can't be cleaned. You know, if it's some other kind of needlework, you know, quilting or something like that, that can be cleaned, then, you know, that's another.
But durability situation. I would put durability at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other than a beautiful design, I mean, obviously, but
right.
And then I think you'd want to go to a church, to the church council, whatever it is. And you, before you put hours and hours in, you want to make sure that they actually would use it, you know? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Get permission, make sure that, you know, and that's the other thing that would come into play is churches have different seasons, Lent, Easter, Advent, Christmas, and Christmas, you know, second Sunday after Christmas or whatever, however they do. So the colors come into play. I know when I was in high school, my dad and I sang in a choir. We were Baptist. I'm Lutheran now. I'm grumpy Lutheran now. But at the time, we were Baptist. And the choir robes, we had different stoles, different colors for the different seasons. And there was a chart on the wall. This is what, you know, this is what you wear when you put your robe on. So you got to make sure the colors and make sure they're the right colors. Like if it's green, you better make sure it's the green that starts.
Right green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just think it would be a fun thing to do. And it's something that you could do as a guild.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, you could put something together. If you were in a small town, select a church, that would be a fun thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and work with the church on the design.
Yeah.
You know, so that it fits with their aesthetic and whatever, you know, if they just want it for everyday Sunday or if it's for a special time. You know, there's a lot of considerations for doing that kind of work.
Yeah. No, it just hit me most recent time, Easter Sunday was, that would be it'd be a cool thing to do. And how cool would that be to have your work up on the altar, you know, knowing it's going to be there and used multiple times. That would be a pretty neat thing.
Well, and you might find other people in the congregation that would be interested in learning how to do the work and participating in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Could be fun.
Which is another way to get to know people in your congregation.
Yep. If you're of that mind, yes. Yep.
Well, yeah. Maybe you don't want to know the other people. I don't know.
You know, different strokes, different folks, you know, whatever. But so it was just, you know, there's another avenue for needlework, and you can do some pretty stuff. And, you know, guilds that are looking, you know, looking for a project, maybe they can't afford to have a teacher come in and do a workshop, or are just looking for a longer term project. You could do a really cool thing. Then I was trying to think, where else would you, if you did some stitching, stitched a piece like that, where else would you, in a community, would there be other places?
Yeah. So decades ago, the Cedar Valley chapter of the Embroiderers Guild stitched something for the theater.
Oh.
The it's the community. I forget now. Maybe it's not the community theater. It's one of the theaters in town. And I wasn't in that chapter then, so I wasn't involved in it. And I've only seen it once. It kind of disappeared for a while, and then somebody found it and they put it back up. I don't remember what it is. It's large though, you know, maybe 3x3 or something like that. It's big. And then my mom worked on a project in Denver.
Well, what was the piece for? Was it on the curtains or just a display?
Oh, it was on the wall.
Okay.
It was framed and they just hung it on the wall.
Okay. All right.
And something symbolic of the theater in Cedar Rapids, I think. Mm-hmm. Like I say, it's been a while since I saw it and I don't remember for sure. My mom participated in a big project in Denver where they did some tapestries for, I forget which building, a civic center, I think maybe. And an artist designed the tapestries. There were four of them. They were seasonal of the mountains, you know, and then the paintings were small, you know, and then one of the shop owners in Denver back then, and again, this was decades ago too, enlarged the paintings onto big canvases.
Oh.
They were probably maybe 8 or 9 feet long,
really,
a couple feet wide, and then people would just, you know, they stretched them, put them on slate frames probably, or gigantic stretcher bars, and they were set up so people could just come and work on them. I have no idea if those are still hanging, but I know they were up for a long, long time.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of guilds that do these kinds of things for civic projects.
Yeah.
Which, you know, might appeal more to a guild with a lot of different, you know, people who attend different kinds of churches and things like that. You know, maybe they don't want to do something for the Lutherans because they're, you know, I don't know, Buddhist. But you might find you know, maybe you do something for City Hall that is representative of your city. And again, like you say, it's a good project for a guild to do.
Well, now that you mentioned that, libraries come to mind too.
Libraries. Museums, you know, maybe. So the Cedar Rapids Art Museum thinks that needlework is craft, so they don't want anything to do with us.
Okay. They're missing out.
Yeah. But I don't know, maybe there's other kinds of other museums, maybe local small museums that would be interested in having an embroidery.
Yeah. That's a different avenue. Share the, share the art, share the, Yeah. Except for people who think needlework is women's work. They don't get anything. No, sorry. You're out. Yep. You're out. The other thing that a lot of thinking time, a lot of bike riding, a lot of thinking time. When we look at our stash, mm-hmm. and which, as we've already described, we'd have to live forever to use it all. But I wondered how many people have that piece of cloth or set of threads that they bought for some special project. And the years have gone by. And it, you know.
Or they bought them because they were beautiful and they're saving them for that special project to come along.
Mm-hmm. Yep. When's that going to happen?
When does that happen?
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a psychological barrier there, I think, of, okay, I bought this because I really thought it was special, and someday I'm gonna use it for the shining example of my crowning achievement of my needlework career, blah 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 blah, and then you never use it.
Yeah, we're not alone in that. I hear that from quilters.
Oh.
I hear it from people who do clothing construction. You know, you buy that beautiful piece of silk, and then it sits there.
Yeah.
For years, because you are afraid to cut into it. You don't have the right pattern. It's too good to use, you know. What?
Yeah, what'd you buy it for then?
Right.
Yeah. But you have that mental process of, oh, I bought this yard of linen. Oh, it's so beautiful. Well, cut it and stitch on it. Oh, I'm waiting for something special.
Oh, that first cut is so hard to make.
It is. It is. Yep.
What if I cut a 10 by 10 piece out of it and then I need more for the next piece? I've ruined it. I have to buy another yard.
Yeah. Yeah. And there is a mental thing. When I was setting up all those projects here a couple, 3 weeks ago, the one that I'm going to use for the modern folk embroidery piece, it's a big sampler. I had a full yard. Mm-hmm. And just before I cut, there was that moment. I've got this big, beautiful yard of this gorgeous linen. Do I want to cut this chunk out of it? And then it was, why'd you buy it? I got over that hump. Why did you buy it? So it can sit in a drawer all folded up? Or so you can stitch on it and have a nice design? And but there was that moment, and I said, no, you idiot. You bought it to use it. Cut it. Cut it. You know. And now I have a couple of pieces, smaller pieces, that I don't know what I'll use them for, but I've got this piece that sampler is going to go on and it's going to look really nice. But yeah, I had to get over that. Had to get over that. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I find the psychology of it all very fascinating, you know, and I'm sure you could go to any woodworker, you know, and he's got this piece of blah, 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 exotic wood waiting for that moment, you know? Yeah, and there it sits. Yep.
Probably true of any hobby that is some kind of a maker.
Yeah.
You know, there's always the materials that are just a cut above the normal stuff. You know, the normal stuff, no big deal. You use that all the time. But then you've got this special thing.
Yep.
That you're saving for what?
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. East African teak wood. I have a 4x4 piece of East African teak wood that I'm saving for that moment. And yeah. Cut it up. Use it. That's what you bought it for. Yeah.
Yeah. There's, make something out of it.
Yep. There's a moment though. There's that mental moment where, oh, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. Okay, that was the extent. What's that?
I don't think I buy stuff, special stuff. I mean, I've got a lot of silk threads, mm-hmm. and I don't use silk threads all the time. But when I I buy for my stash because I think I will use them eventually, not because they're something special.
Yeah.
I just like the color. I like the way it feels. It's a color that I know that I'll use for something. And then when I start a new project, I look at what I've already got to see if I can use any of that.
Right, but see, okay, so there's and a moment ago I was wrapping this up, but this is
Oh,
but
sorry.
no, but that's a point, because you're also over that hump, that mental hump of buying a design or a chart, and you don't vary from the prescribed threads. When you buy a chart, the first thing you think is, what colors am I going to use? See, and see, you're on the other side of that fence. It's not, yeah, you're going, what colors am I going to use? Get me home so I can get my threads out and see what's going to work.
And now we are talking about counted canvas for the most part. I really don't change cross stitch, but I do more counted canvas than cross stitch. You wouldn't know that by if you saw all the charts I have for cross stitch. But it really is true. So gosh, I don't know when the last time I stitched a counted canvas piece and used the color. Oh, I know. I've done that with some of Debbie Rowley's things. I've used the colors that she specified because I really love the colors. But most of the time, I'm changing the colors. I'm using threads I have because I have a lot.
But see, but that's, you have a lot, but you bought them for a reason, and you immediately, like I said, get me home so I can get the threads out and figure out which of these I'm going to use. There's probably nothing really special to you that, oh, that's set aside for this moment in time. It's these, they're basically an array of tools you have to achieve the look you want.
Now, if I've bought a thread for a project or a piece of fabric or beads or whatever, I put that with the chart so that I don't lose them. Now, will I ever get around to doing it? Maybe not, but they're together. And so I don't have to think, okay, where's, I think I had fabric for this. Where is it? Or, I had some threads I wanted to use on this, or so if I buy things specifically for a project, I keep them together. I put them in a Ziploc bag or, something to keep them together.
And see, and I've made
And
that mistake. Oh, go ahead.
I also make a note. I use X Stitch, the X Stitch app to keep track of my fabrics and threads and stuff. So when I put a thread in a project, I note on the X Stitch app which project I use that thread on.
There it is.
And then I also write it on, I keep a journal, a handwritten journal with at least one page for each project. And I put it in there also. So I've got a couple of different ways to get to what I was going to do if I somehow separated them.
Yeah, see, I've made that mistake. Like I have some charts that I have written on them kitted. But the kit is not with the chart. I might as well have written on there happy birthday, because you know what I mean? 'Cause it would take me a full day to find the ground cloth and the threads that I kitted up for this thing, if I
Because you
still
didn't
have
keep them
them.
together.
No. Why would I do that? That would make sense.
Well, that would be a kit.
I know, but I didn't do that. I put the threads in the other stuff, and I put the thing in the, and it's like, you idiot, what are you doing? Yeah, they should all been in the same, but no. At the time, I'm sure at the time I knew, I thought I was going to get to it right away, so I knew where everything was at, and then stuff got put away. Oh, I'll remember. No, don't remember. No. So yeah, they're sitting there. They're kitted somewhere. Yeah. Yeah. And the trouble is that they were kitted at the time, but what says I didn't use the threads for something else? Mm-hmm. Who knows? Yeah. Oh, this is a nice thread. I wonder why I got this. I'll use it for this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have several, probably 8 or 10 projects that called for Swarovski crystals.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, what, 3 years or something ago, Swarovski says, we're not going to do the craft market anymore. So I bought the crystals for all of them from whatever stores I could get them from.
Uh-huh.
And since I was buying the crystals, I went ahead and bought all the rest of the beads too.
Uh-huh.
So I have those. I have the beads and the crystals and the list printed out from the chart in a bag for each project.
Oh.
I don't have the threads with them yet, and I don't have the fabrics with them yet. But those are things I could just pull a bag out of the box and say, okay, I'm going to stitch this project. All I need to do is find my threads and fabric, and all my beads and everything are already here.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, I didn't really need to do that because there's replacements for the Swarovski crystals, but a lot of the times the shops had them on sale.
Uh-huh.
Because they were trying to move them out.
Yeah.
So they, you know, could bring in the, you know, the replacements.
Right.
And there's, you know, to find the exact color or color close enough without having a bead shop, which we don't have anywhere near here either.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was just easier for me to get everything when Swarovski crystals were still available.
Right. Well, and they're also Swarovski's crystals, which is something in its own right, right?
Well, there's a lot of companies that are, I shouldn't say a lot, 2 or 3 that most of the bead stores are purchasing from. Prestige Crystals.
Are they
is
as
one
good?
That seems, they seem to be.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And there's some Czech crystals and I forget 2 or 3 others that are doing the, you know, the bicones and the things like that are so pretty and sparkly, and they seem to be comparable.
Yeah. Well, okay. Cause that was my first thought was you know, the replacements, are they a tier below? But apparently not. So, okay.
You know, what little I know now, a beater, somebody that really does a lot of this work with those kinds of beads and crystals might say, oh yeah, they're not the same quality.
Yeah.
But for me, I can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
So
they work
for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you have the bags of the real stuff all fixed up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wasn't that organized. Now, if I kit something up, it's all in a bag with a label on it and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Lesson learned. Oops.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now we're going to wrap up. That's it.
Okay.
Sunday, Alexandrina Dardea. Amazing tambour, beaded, stump work, embroidery, you name it. Patreon.com/FiberTalk if you want to support us and tap into the content that we're doing for that. Lots of fun things going on there with more plans in the works. And we'll be back live next Wednesday, Stitch Hour. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.